because what you're telling us is, yeah, you can't cover, you haven't covered the entire site with test trenches, and therefore anything caught between those trenches should be an inadvertent find. And I've sat on this burial council many years ago. We had a young lady on the burial council, and she took people, archaeologists, to task because she didn't think there were enough test trenches. And, you know, well, we're all reasonable, but maybe we shouldn't be so reasonable in the future. Maybe we should require you archaeologists to get out there and dig more trenches.
Ew.
Yeah.
And I could cool with that.
Well, I appreciate your comments very much.
I'm sure you do. Thanks, Matt.
Yeah.
Mahalo. Mahalo, Matt.
Aloha, this is Regina.
To take that on you. I think you know where we're coming from.
Yes, thank you.
Aloha, this is Regina. I just have a couple of comments there. So with regard to the Hawaii administrative rules, you know, the process I know most of us on this call are fully aware of these, but I just want to offer up some comments that are based in those administrative rules. So with regard to Hawaii Administrative Rules 13300, 13333 specifically addresses previously identified iwi kupuna, and in this case, they're iwi kupuna that have been identified through archaeological inventory survey, and or we've also used this oral history and testimony, and just by weight of the amount of testimony and the consistency of testimony. This is with regard to Wailupe and 5088 Kia'i Place, what is also known as the Unterman property in Wailupe. So with regard to those iwi, oral testimony was enough to warrant Shipti recommending that they be treated, that particular iwi kupuna be treated as previously identified. So that's like oral history, consistency of testimony, and also archaeological inventory survey, as with Hale Waiolu. With regard to inadvertent discoveries, when construction moves into the active phase, where there's no longer, you know, the time frame of doing a targeted archaeological inventory survey, then the decision making for the for any finds is more immediate. That's the reason why previously identified is treated one way, and the jurisdiction for that is under the OIPC, and then inadvertent discoveries falls to SHPD. However, I will say this, that in my like history with SHPD, I have been pretty consistently aware of establishing a good relationship with OIBC, and then now, like within the past 3-4 years, trying to maintain and establish relationships with the cultural and lineal descendants to specific projects, and specifically iwi kupuna. So we really don't want to find ourselves as an agency in a situation where we're making decisions by ourselves. Yeah. We want to always give information and provide information to the stakeholders who would be affected by the decision making, and who I believe, as does the administrative rules, as reflected by the administrative rules, that we should all be part of this process, that we should provide that information, and then we should also, hold on one second, we should provide that information and then work together cooperatively to come up with a solution. So that's all I have to say about that in particular. I do understand, and I hear, and I've been hearing pretty consistently the concerns that both the community, the practitioners, recognized descendants, and the OIBC have been saying with regard to how come there's this bifurcation of treating previously identified versus inadvertent discoveries. So I just wanted to address that from within the administrative rules. And also say this other little thing. We've been taken to task as an agency by a community to really improve the way that we do archaeology in the state of Hawaii. And as a result, that administrative rules that refer to how archaeology is done in Hawaii are the first set of rules that our law fellow is addressing. Iwi Kupuna is not amongst those first set of rules that she's looking at, but it probably will be coming up shortly. So that's all I have to say about that. And if people have questions, I might not be able to provide an answer right now, but I really would like to have Matt reclaim his time so that he can talk more about Hale Waiolu, and you guys can move forward with a determination if it's appropriate today. Mahalo.
Mahalo, Regina.
Mahalo, Regina. I have something else I'd like to say, please. You know, in regards to the recent cultural descendants comments, I believe Ka'io and Madaris both in the burial treatment plan voiced wanting to relocate Iwi Kupuna. My Ohana and I are always for to preserve in place. If we felt Iwi Kupuna was in danger, say sewage, water line or whatnot, we would ask for relocation. In this situation, we don't find our kupuna being in any kind of danger. So that is the reason why we request to preserve in place and not to relocate. I think one of the issues that Madaris brought up is that because he wants to relocate because, correct me if I'm wrong, but because descendants will not be able to comfortably visit the site. While I can understand his concern there, right now my biggest and my Ohana's biggest concern is the comfort of Iwi Kupuna not being disturbed anymore. So I just wanted to put that out there. Mahalo.
If I could, Keala, if I could just.
Hola.
Go ahead,
Keala.
Oh, mana.
This is Mana. I just wanted to echo Keala's mana. We are on the same page. My Ohana and I share her sentiments and concerns that if we thought this kupuna wasn't going to be safe being left alone, we would also explore different ideas. Like Keala and her Ohana, we feel that this is the best way to move forward. And we think thanks to Matt and the burial treatment plan, we can leave that kupuna where it is and where it should be. So mahalo, Keala. Thank you.
Mahalo, mana.
Mahalo, everyone. And I would like to add that as far as all of our working relationships, and given the different roles and responsibilities we each have. So there's, you know, component A, burial council, B, SHPD, C, archaeological firms, and project proponents. Amongst those three, there's every possibility for some really excellent communication. I mean, open lines of communication, as we have seen. Both Regina and Matt have been engaged at that level, and they have, you know, in my past experience, they have always been rather proactive with doing that. So I encourage both our colleagues at SHPD as well as our friends, you know, doing different work in the community. Matt, with you at, I look to you and your leadership for continued engage and knowing, you know, knowing how active this island gets, you might just be in the perfect position to set the pace and be a trendsetter amongst other archaeological firms where you actually can choose to engage people, especially when it comes to what under the current law would be considered inadvertent discovery. Any archaeological firm, I believe, could engage community and reach out. And likewise, you know, we've been lucky because Regina is you know, a part of the Kanaka community that avails itself to advocacy. But, you know, that meant that she already came knowing how critical it is to communicate and to ask. But with that said, I just encourage everyone to continue perhaps building, you know, and increasing that even more so. So that way, with or without, you know, someone saying that you had to consult, I encourage people to consult and to, you know, to engage freely. I think that that's a best case scenario, because that makes everybody's life easier when things are ideally progressing down the road. Matt, Regina, anything towards that?
If I could just interject, going back to Keala's comments, I just wanted to clarify that Clarence Medeiros, he does support preservation in place. He did very much express his concern about access issues, as you said, Keala, but he ultimately is in favor of preservation in place. Gail Kayo did, though, say that she felt more comfortable with relocation to a different location. So, and in terms of your comments, Regina and Hina, you know, I think we do try as best we can to reach out for these inadvertent finds. You know, the laws are quite strict on the timeline that this is a decision to be made. It's supposed to be in just a day or two by the statute. But, you know, I think we typically take weeks by trying to have site visits, getting the project proponents to draw figures that show what preservation in place would look like, what relocation would look like. And we try to distribute those to all the concerned parties, including the Oahuan Barrow Council's representative for that district, the recognized cultural descendants from the area. So we do try to reach out, and it's not, we don't try to limit the outreach simply because it is an inadvertent fund. We do try our best.
I have a question. Doesn't, you know, there's a certain criteria, right? Inadvertence come under monitoring reports, under a monitoring job, the report is made, but under monitoring, isn't that also data recovery, all data recovery, and that are considered when EVR found as inadvertent due to certain criteria? I think it's 13.2756B5 or 13.284-6B5, where they're discovered. The archaeologist shall consult with members of the relevant ethnic group when appropriate and consider any comments when determining appropriate treatment. The report shall describe any consultation process with the consulted individuals and organizations and summarize their comments. Is that how consultation goes now?
I'm sorry, you're kind of breaking up there.
Are ethnic groups being contacted for comment and organizations as the statute say you need to do?
Again, I couldn't quite hear you, but I think you're asking about the consultation process. So typically for an archaeological inventory survey, if it's in a sensitive area, we expect to have potential hearings.
I'm talking about monitoring. When you're monitoring a data recovery, then EVR are found, right? Or their EV appear. And then it's under a certain criteria, right?
I'm not following you. But
what kind of criteria does the EV fall under when it appears on the job site? What criteria does that fall under? Are there certain criteria, Matt, I'm asking?
An inadvertent find requires notification to HPD, the coroner's office, and he immediately SHs out to OHA and any recognized cultural descendants from the area, and also notifies the district rep from the Oahuan Barrow Council. That all happens relatively quickly. And then from that, we go on and have consultation to support a treatment determination, either preservation in place or relocation, based on the individual circumstances of what was found and how well it could be preserved in place, or if it has to best, that can best be done.
Okay. Is criteria E, is that the one that includes the Ivikupuna?
Criterion E, correct.
Yes, okay.
But by convention, criteria E.
Yeah, I'm just trying to understand better. That's what I'm trying to do. So that would include your consultation with any relevant ethnic groups. And like you discussed, you just said that you reached out to all of these different people and organizations. Okay, thank you, Matt.
Right, thank you.
Mahalo. Council or community members, any further questions or comments for what we've heard so far?
I have a quick comment. So I would like to kako'o what Chuck, what he said about being so careful about what we are labeling our kupuna as inadvertent. And I really see so many problems. I've seen them, I continue to see them when our kupuna are labeled one way and then another, and they fall under different sets of laws and rules and regulations. They become, what is the word for it? They get sacrificed a lot of times for whatever reason, yeah? So I kako'o what Chuck said, because it's not so much about the letter of the law as it is about the intent and spirit of the law, which is meant to protect our kupuna, regardless of what you want to label them as, previously identified inadvertent, right? So if you're going to follow, if you care about our kupuna, you have aloha for our kupuna. Who, many of these kupuna have been in their burial sites for 100 years or more. This is their home. This is where they are supposed to be resting for the rest of their lives, right? Undisturbed. And I see too many disturbances time and time and time again, because decisions are made in a vacuum, or were made in a vacuum, and there's a time frame. So, you know, thank you for reading that that administrative rule, Regina, that talks about decision making is more immediate. You know, there's an immediacy once construction has begun to making a decision. That is never a good recipe for protecting our kupuna. Because what's the timeline for our kupuna? You know, who stands and speaks for our kupuna and says, this is just not right, yeah? So, I mean, I'm trying to understand these laws, but on one hand, but on the other hand, I see so much finagling around the law, through the law, whatever it is, you know, and Waiha'o is a perfect example of that. So Matt, I know you remember Ka'anohi Kalaikini, and I remember seeing her always being so maka'ala in these meetings when presentations were made. And she would always ask for more trenching, more testing. Can you test over here? Can you test over there? I remember because I was in those meetings with her and with you. So I know you remember it, and I'm very grateful that you were always accommodating to those requests. Yeah. So Ka'anohi is not with us anymore. But that doesn't mean that particular Mana'o, which all of you archaeologists, gotta go to the full extent that you possibly can without being asked anymore. Don't do the minimum, do the maximum. Do the maximum. Especially when you know you're in an area where there are going to be Ivikupuna. Sometimes massive amounts of Ivikupuna. And once that construction starts and that AIS has been completed and we're now into the monitoring phase of it, you know, come across more kupuna, depending on who the company is and who the archaeologist and who the project director is, those kupuna can either be saved or they can be sacrificed. Yeah, just depending on the choices that you guys make on how to proceed. So I don't like to leave these kind of things up to chance, you know, and we can encourage everybody to try to do the right thing and do the pono thing. But how many times do we have to see the complete opposite happening to our kupuna? To the point where by the time we even find out about it, it's too late for them. They've been taken out of the ground because they fall under a whole different set of laws. So I guess my manao is do your best for our kupuna. That's why the OIBC exists, to help protect and malama our kupuna, to hear the ohana's voices. And I mean, there are archaeologists and project directors that I truly am grateful for, because they try their best to do their best. And then we got complete opposite for some people, for some companies. So, you know, Matt, I'm always grateful that, you know, you strive for a higher ground than some others that I have seen. But I think we need to be really clear across the board that the time of taking her kupuna out of their resting places is pow. Yeah? Either redesign the project or shut it down. Because I'm sick of it. I'm just sick of it. I'm sick of seeing our kupuna being taken out of their graves. That should not be happening at their expense, so they can build something. Freaking toilet, freaking building, whatever it is. Our kupuna were there first. They've been there for hundreds of years. They deserve to stay where they're at. So I'm going to wrap up, but thank you, Chuck, for bringing up that point, and I kako'o you, fully kako'o, and mahalo you.
Mahalo kala'i. Mahalo. I would like to add on top of that, of what the kala'i just said. Hina, you remember, we were in consultation with Alexander and Baldwin for Waihonua.
Yes.
You know, a lot of it falls on the developer as to how far do they want to go to do what is pono.
Aye.
When impacting the Ibi Kupuna.
Aye.
Waihonua was, because Alexander and Baldwin chose to do this, to do hand excavations throughout their entire property to minimize the impact, or let's just throw it out there, the dehumanization of our Ibi Kupuna. That is what needs to stop. On the, you know, that responsibility lies on the developer. And as I recently asked Hart, because of the Ibi Kupuna that was found on Waimanu, which is right across the street from the burial preserves at Waihonua, that once they hit the sensitive A horizon Jochus layer, that the construction crew do hand excavations, you know, with the shovel and not with the excavator. So, you know, in case we run into Ibi Kupuna, it'll be a more gentle process and we won't have to be digging through the piles for Ibi that was scattered and possibly not find them. So that is my suggestion for all developers, that they should hand excavate all of their trenches in their project once they reach the A horizon and Jochus sand level, you know. But of course, I kako'o the whole idea that there is no such thing as an inadvertent, that every single one of our kupuna are previously identified. Only because this is a Western mindset concept that, oh, just because no more gravestone or some kind of marker that, they're not worth it. They're nothing. You know, let's just move them someplace else. No, they're something. They mean something to us. They are our kūpuna. We want to preserve them in place as much as possible. Alexander and Baldwin made a beautiful burial preserve in two areas and designed their entire project around that those burial preserves. So it's not to say it's not possible for these developers to do. It is possible. It's just a matter of whether or not they want to do it. So it's on them. Kala'i, mai ka'i, mahalo.
In all that she just said, mahalo. And also, Madam Chair, I'm the new one here. Have you ever seen in past burial councils meetings in the years you've been, and Chuck as well, and Kali, when a burial treatment plan comes up for determination, has anyone ever said, we're going to defer this on this, or accepting this burial treatment plan until you go back and do more trenches? Has anybody done that before? Can that be done?
Well, what I'd like to suggest, and Matt, you've done a good job. You've been very lucky. You've had some very conscientious clients over the years, and you ought to be proud about that, or very happy. But just as a thought, you know, myself, I think I'm just as guilty as anybody. But I've seen a lot of projects where you come in, not you, Matt, but archaeologists, come in and you do an AIS, and you can't cover the entire site because there are footprints of warehouses. And so whatever happens underneath that, those warehouses get torn down, and then human remains found later on underneath those footprints, and they're considered inadvertent. You know, an idea I just like to throw out to my fellow council members is that in the future, maybe we shouldn't approve an AIS until the site has been completely cleared and tested.
Yeah.
Mahalo. And Matt, again, I think you've been doing a damn good job. So don't take, you know, anything I say out of context.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you, Chuck.
Mahalo. I'd like to respond to the question that Auli'i put forward. I don't believe that I recall in my tenure on the council that it got to the point of burial treatment plan, and then we said we would not recommend approval of the BTP unless there was more trenching done. My recollection is that at every project that came before us, it was always in a much earlier stage, and that pursuant to said burial treatment plan, that there had to be a couple of components absolutely necessary. Early and consistent consultation, sufficient test trenching that, especially when involving recognized descendants and other stakeholders, but also consistent and constant involvement with our council. And of course, that's not to diminish the presence of SHPD in the discussion all along the way. By the time you get to the burial treatment plan, ideally, that means that the project proponent has done all that it can and all that it should, in good faith to make sure that they've covered, you know, sufficient ground.
Madam Chair, can I comment?
Yes, yeah. Susan.
This is Susan from SHPD. So with respect to the rules and how SHPD Archaeology Branch is trying to enforce the rules, any project that has a site that includes Evi Kūpuna under an AIS automatically is significant under Criterion E. And the rules state that the the project proponent or the agency must consult with NHOs, particularly OHA and other interested parties, and that they must do that before the AIS is accepted. And part of that role is to, one, agree that the site is significant under Criterion E. Two, do they think that whatever testing has been done is adequate? Do they want more testing? Do they want less testing? If they want more, how do they want that to look? And then also, what is the appropriate mitigation? So that includes, do we want archaeological monitoring? Do we want preservation plan, et cetera? So the, if the process works as it is defined in the rules, that consultation must occur before the AIS is finished. And as such, that means that the interested parties should all have provided input regarding that what they consider the adequacy of the AIS. You will find that if you look at SHPTI's reviews of AISs, that we often will send back a AIS and indicate that it can't be accepted because that step has not occurred. If you look at SHPTI's letters in when we do request an AIS, we request that there be consultation prior to an agreement as to what the testing strategy will be. And the whole idea behind that is to seek input about what the nature of the AIS will look like. And Matt can let you know that right now we're looking at a project where Cultural Surveys is getting ready to do a project. And the different consulting parties, some want an AIS to be done.
See,
some want archaeological monitoring. So we try to make sure that that consultation occurs before those decisions get made or before an AIS is finalized.
Okay, so on the land itself, on a parcel of land itself, Matt, you might be able to help me understand this. On the land itself, how do you determine where your trenches are going to be from a cultural perspective area? I mean, what determines where you're going to put these trenches?
So from our perspective, when we look at what is being proposed as a testing strategy, and the rules don't require that an agency or project proponent come to us and propose a testing strategy. That is something that SHPTI has made as a formal request that is not in the rules. But what we do is when we enter into that consultation, we're looking for three things at a minimum. What do we know about the property? Do we know if there's LCAs that were filed for or were awarded, such that we know something about how the land was used and who was on the land? Two, we look for what is the proposed project, and in both in terms of the nature of the project and the footprint. So depending on who we're consulting with, some communities say don't dig that portion of the project property if they don't need to, because the area is culturally sensitive and we would like to avoid encountering Ivi Kupuna if possible. So we look for what is the actual project that's being proposed, how deep do they need to dig, where are they putting it on the property, and want to make sure that we get representative coverage of that proposed project footprint, particularly in areas where there will be deep excavations. We want to make sure that if they're going to dig down 10 feet to put in pilings or put in an elevator shaft, we want to make sure that that location is tested. And then the last thing we look for is representative coverage of the overall project area.
of the parcel so that they don't put all their testing on saying, okay, our footprint's going to be on the east side of the property, but then they encounter something and they need to move their footprint. We need to make sure that we have enough information so that they can do that. So those are the things that we look at. And then we, like I said, we look at the concerns or input provided by the different parties. So some parties will say, we would rather have this project move forward because it's small and the nature of the project, don't dig any more than we need to. So we just want monitoring because we're only going to monitor the areas where excavation actually has to occur, whereas others will want the actual project under an AIS. And so we try to gather that information before a decision is made.
Well, thanks. That's very, very helpful, Susan. Thank you for all of that explanation. Very helpful.
Chair, if I may.
Yes.
I'll keep my comments brief because I have to run to the bathroom.
But, just mute them.
You know, testing and trenching is great. You do more of them, but they're not perfect. I mean, trenching, it's more time consuming, it's more money, and it's not perfect. I remember in our case we had in Lalamilo, we had trenches lined up one by one, thinking we had it all covered. And just in those gap areas where we didn't do the trenching, I had to lay the road down, the Ibikupuna's right there. So it'll never be a perfect science unless you dig out the whole area. That's it, the solution.
Yes, it is possible to come up with a testing strategy and for there to be Ibikupuna within the project area and for them to not be located. We had a project where we dug, where a number of trenches were dug and the one Ibikupuna was exposed, but it was exposed during the monitoring and the AIS test trench missed it by less than 1 meter.
Yeah.
So yes, you can't use AIS testing to locate and say there are no Ibikupuna here and that there none will be encountered during monitoring.
That said, wouldn't an easy solution be something we did on Hawaii Island, which is to incorporate that kind of language into the barrel treatment plan? So for instance, you discovered two burials that's covered in the barrel treatment plan, but then you also have a section inside of there that says, okay, so we found the two burials, we recommend preservation in place. In the event construction continues and more burials are found, we will do our utmost to preserve those burials in place and we will consult with SHPD and the Oahu Island Burial Council. Should we discover a burial in this area that directly impacts the construction and needs to be relocated, we will then consult with the OIBC, the recognized lineal and cultural descendants, to work out a solution for that Ibikupuna and potentially have a preservation place designated on the side that those Ibikupuna could go to in the event there is a relocation, but it has to go before the lineal and cultural descendants and the OIBC. I mean, basically is in the event these types of, I'm just gonna call it inadvertent discoveries for now, you've come across with an inadvertent discovery, you just cover that plan in the BTP of what you're going to do. If it's preservation in place, okay, preservation in place, we will cover this with the lineal cultural descendants. If it's relocation, we'll go before the OIBC, consult with lineal cultural descendants, and come up with a solution that way. Because, you know, you could go the route of more trenching. It creates problems as much as it solves. There's pros and cons to doing that. And the more important thing is, it's not perfect. It never is perfect unless you dig out the whole area. But you don't want to do that either. So
no, and that's why the consultation is so important, because it will vary from one location to another as to who are the lineal or cultural descendants and what do they want. And some locations the community does not want more trenching, and other places they do. So that's why the consultation is so important in terms of laying out a path for an individual project.
So that's what the solution I propose. Instead of it being just like in a burial treatment plan if you discover two burials, that the burial treatment plan.
Well, I love you, and the city's impotent.
That's it.
The city gets super. I did a good job with this. They, you know, because of the Section 106 involvement, you know, there was initial consultation with the OIBC before we went into the field. We discussed the testing strategy before then. We had a Section 106 meeting. We invited about 100 people to come to that meeting. We discussed the AIS testing strategy at that meeting before we implemented it. Subsequent to doing the AIS, and we did have the EV discovery there, we had two subsequent public meetings for the Section 106, discussed the findings, discussed the results of testing strategy. So there's been a great deal of consultation for this project. You know, subsequent to the burial find, there were four presentations before the OIBC about this specific burial treatment, the most recent being in April of this month. We're trying to reach out as much as we can.
Right. In your burial treatment plan, do you have a section in there that says, okay, from here forward, as construction continues and you discover Ivi Kupuna, this is what we're planning to do. We will consult. We will try to preserve those in place. We will consult with lineal cultural descendants. We will bring it before the YBC. Not for the burials that have been identified, but for like future burials, if they are discovered. Is there anything like that in the PPP?
We used to include language like that. And as I mentioned to Chuck, it's been probably almost, you know, maybe 8 or 9 years now, but you know, that was removed by SHPD based on their consultation with their attorney general's office. We can certainly try to put that back in. It is basically describing what you're suggesting is describing the inadvertent burial process that the OIBC has to reach out to these groups. And yeah, so we can put something like that in there.
Okay. I apologize because I guess I'm basing that on old language, but yeah, that would solve the problem. I mean, but if the AGs is the ones who had removed it, back when I was at SHPD, that was standard practice. Right. And it could cover for situations just like this in the event more EVs are identified.
We would include that with the Bureau Council, the OIBC language. It would say, you know, we're going to preserve in place, but based on discussion with the descendants, we have a certain area set aside for potential inadvertent finds. We used to include language like that, but we haven't been doing it. The responses we've had from the AG's office.
Well, I have a comment.
Yes, go ahead.
So we're talking about consultation, Maika'i, consult early, consult often. I wonder if any of these contract workers, archaeologists, project directors, even SHPD burial specialists who go on site to, you know, try to figure out a solution to Kupuna who fall in a totally different category. I wonder if you folks ever take the time to consult with the actual Kupuna that you'd be impacting. And I think it's important that you make a connection with the Ivi Kupuna that gonna rely on some decisions about their disposition. And I just wonder if you folks ever take the time to just sit there and ask them what they want to do. What would they like to be done? In addition to consulting with the living descendants. I mean, our Ivi Kupuna have got to mean more than a bunch of rules and regulations. Yeah? Our Ivi Kupuna are precious to us. Yeah. So I think it's so important to connect with them, especially when you're in a position of decision making.
On the contrary, in 200.
If you haven't done it yet, please consider just taking some time to sit with the Kupuna that you have come across after your studies have been completed and all these other things you guys need to follow in the course of construction, and just take a moment and pule with them, pule for them, yeah? Because
pule for you.
Their fate is in your hands. Mahalo.
Aloha.
Aloha. Mahalo.
I would like to add to that
So, Susan, mahalo for all that you've said. You've kind of brought to mind some things. You know, when you spoke about elevator shafts in their plans. Now, when this is what I remember back in, you know, Walmart Ke'eamoku days, when we, my auntie and I asked Walmart to change your plans of what your building is going to be like and build around Kupuna. They came back saying that, oh, but we already went through the permit and DPP process, and that takes a couple of years for them to do so. It's impossible for them to do that now. So my question to you, Susan, is that when a project comes up and SHPD takes a look at it, look at their plans, is that before they go in for the permits, or is the permits already put in and it's like near to impossible to having their project, you know, changed their footprint?
So two things. One is, many of the things we receive, we get them after they've gone to the Department of Planning and Permitting, and DPP has approved their construction plans, and then they come to us for review. And we don't review the plans in terms of being able to change the design of their building or whatever. We only are reviewing at that point what they've been approved to do, and then what will the potential for that project to impact. But what we've been trying to do over the last few years is to get agencies and developers to come to us before they go to the Department of Planning with their final design, to one, get them engaged in consultation early so that people can provide input about concerns about the area, concerns about their design, and where they will have an opportunity to potentially change the design before they go in to get it approved. So we're trying to work with two systems, one in where we're dealing with things that have been sent and they've already been approved and we have to work with what's been designed, and others where we're trying to have them come early to the Burial Council and present their project, even though they haven't started the project, they haven't encountered any Iwi Kupuna, but to be able to let people know, here's what they're proposing to do, so that people can provide input about concerns or input about what an AIS might look like for their project. So we do work with both of those situations. And then the third one is the one that Regina mentioned, and that is when DPP issues a permit for a project and it doesn't come to us. And we've been working with DPP for at least 4 years. I did meet with Dr. Downer a week ago to say, let's see if we can't organize a new meeting with DPP. We've provided them GIS maps in the past about where culturally sensitive areas. And we are working on generating new maps with the idea that we can maybe help them do better decision-making about what they send us and what they don't. So right now, for example, we don't get all the housing projects. We don't get all the seawalls. Well, we know the seawalls are almost always an issue. So we are working with them. I think that this is something that I think all of us could benefit from by having a broader conversation with more people at the table about what are some of the issues and maybe some of the changes that can be made in the decisions about what things come to SHPD for review. So that's just kind of where we are at the moment.
Okay, mahalo. I have a mana'o anyway. What if instead of test trenches that the project, the entire project is a test trench. All the footings, all of the elevator excavations that are going to happen, all of that be considered a test trench. And then if, say, for instance, the elevator shaft area, you find EV Kupuna there, oh, they got to go back to the drawing table, redesign, you know. I mean, if we want to be sure our EV Kupuna is not considered inadvertent and is always going to be a previously identified Kupuna, that, you know, could we possibly talk about something like that, doing that instead of just doing a test trench here that's 20 feet long, 2 feet wide, or and there, you know, just do the entire footing of the plan that has not yet been through the DPP process. And then if we find EV Kupuna, if the land developer can go back after all of that has done and redesign their building accordingly. I don't know. I think it can be done if Alexander and Baldwin was willing to do this at Waihonua. That kind of sets the precedent for all developers as far as I'm concerned.
I think that, mahalo, Keala, you bring up a good point, which perhaps I'll just throw this into the pot and we'll get to the business of approving or not, or recommending or not recommending this PTP. Perception is everything, as well as deep pockets help to empower efforts like the one we saw at Wehon to do what was requested by recognized descendants as well as council. Sophie, could you put your microphone on mute? Sophie, could you put your microphone on mute? Sophie. Okay, thank you. All right. Yes, so one, perception is everything. Depending on the climate and environment, and when I say that, I mean not only the lay of the land and what that those kind of specs look like for potential burial finds, as well as those who advocate for EV Kupuna issues. It gets very contentious for people who are trying to spend their money to build, to, you know, want to engage. You know, some have thicker spine and some have more frail spine. You know, some want to engage and some want to totally avoid. If they're really keen on how island people do it, then they engage pretty well. But I've seen, you know, instances where especially people who are not from here and have no clue and have no connection, not through a consultant or anybody else, they tend to shy away from certain things. And then sometimes vice versa. So you really can't tell. That's when it comes to the topic of perception. You know, if some people think that they're going to get either attacked or they're walking into a toxic environment, they might just avoid it altogether. And then some people know that because it's a toxic environment, sometimes they're going to try to do everything that they can to consult early and all the time. And then of course, we heard it earlier articulated. We don't necessarily always want to go purposely looking for EV Kupuna. I first learned that from Ka'anohi Kaleikini when she said we don't always want to go looking. So when we have projects that come before us and they articulate the proposed impact areas, those are always the area of focus. The project that have deeper pockets, and perhaps far more proactive kinds of philosophies and engage, they will avail themselves more to redesigning. people who don't have as much money, you know, one day costing them $100,000, $200,000 or more, you know, that's not something that they like to look at, because then that means their cost overrun will end up costing everybody more money all the way around. So it's a very, how do I say it? It's a very nuanced kind of discussion. And I think that allowing this time was positive. It's not necessarily productive for expedition of just council business and then letting everybody go. But I think that it was really good that everybody gained a little bit more fluency in this topic. Without further ado, I think that it's time for us to turn this time back to the council for discussion determination on preservation in place or relocation of human skeletal remains. Matt, could you just give once again a quick recap of what our situation looks like today? Back to the PowerPoint that you had up.
Sure. So the individual is an infant, newborn or very recently birthed individual in a test trench that was during the AIS, about 3 feet below surface. Its location is directly adjacent to what will be an emergency exit. And the plan is to preserve it in place using a horizontal and vertical steel plate to protect it from the adjacent foundation elements. And there'll be no surface treatment to draw attention to it, no signage. There will be access for recognized cultural descendants should they want it. They just need to have a little bit of advanced warning to the project managers that they can prepare for that. And that's all written into the burial treatment plan as written.
Oh, yeah. Mahalo. And last question. Because I'm not looking at it right in front of me.
It's 1 o'clock.
Thank you, sir. When it comes to what the final line stipulates as to any and all further fines,
I think,
are we able to go there?
It's very clearly
any and all subsequent fines.
The burial treatment plan clearly talks about it. If there are any inadvertent fines found during construction, they'll be treated according to Hawaii State burial law, which includes the consultation we've already just discussed, reaching out to the OIBC representatives for that district, reaching out to the OHA, reaching out to the cultural descendants who've come forward. And I think, you know, the overall stance of the city has been to consult, you know, very thoroughly with these people. And if there is an inadvertent fine, that process would take place. And I think the best possible solution would come up in that consultation, either to be preservation in place or relocation, depending on the specific circumstances.
Perhaps let me restate that. Hold on, Matt. We saw in Waimanalo for the Paradise subdivision that, as I was very, very candidly reminded, that I think the words were, as you will recall, Hina, that the burial council had already approved of this in the burial treatment plan. And yes, so what that meant was that it was treated separately from the previously discovered Iwi Kupuna. And then that left us in a pickle of which we're still experiencing, you know, the contention in our community. And I don't want us to walk into that again. Is that the same situation that we're looking at here?
The language that is in the current BTP.
Yeah,
is,
what's in a word? Yeah, the language.
the language is fairly standard, saying that, you know, this is what we're proposing treatment for a specific previously identified burial, if there are subsequent fines, they will be treated according to Hawaii State burial law.
Okay.
I think that that doesn't go far enough. Matt, you have said that you will consult with cultural descendants, and that is not what happened in Waimanalo. So I'd like to see that at least written into this BTP, that you will consult with cultural descendants and get their input.
Well, I think with the Waimanalo paradise, I don't believe there were any cultural descendants.
Yes, there were.
The Waimanalo there is.
There are now, but at the time, there
were. I would like to see that those words written into this BTP, that if any inadvertent discoveries are made, that consultation will be made with any cultural descendants.
Or anything under Criterion E. Anything under
Criterion E. The last line of this burial treatment plan does state that the Shifty will consult with lineal and cultural recognized descendants. It's specifically stated that way in this particular burial treatment plan.
Yeah.
And I'm reading it right now on my computer.
I just want to couple what Chuck is saying too, that anything under Criterion E, it does not only Ivikupuna, but our cultural sites, historical sites, all of those things need to go a little bit more further, like Chuck is saying.
I think how Matt had explained it earlier, that was the practice 8 or 9 years ago, but the AGs had told them that they could no longer do that. Which I want to go on record and say is completely ridiculous, because in NAGPRA, that's exactly what the NAGPRA plan of action is. What you have to do, you have to outline what you're going to do in the future in the event you find burials in the future. That's a NAGPRA plan of action. But the AGs is saying that you cannot do that. If there's burials in the future, you cannot pre-plan or say you're going to do your best to preserve in place, relocate. And so he can only go so far as to what he's describing in the BTP. Whereas back when I was in the burials program, that was standard practice. You had to put that in all your BTPs and outline what you're going to be doing towards the future. Is that correct, Matt?
That's correct. But I think, Chuck, the specific language you're suggesting, if that's part of the procedure, that's part of Hawaii State burial law, it can definitely be made stronger if it's not strong enough as it is now. We can consultation with recognized cultural descendants that have come forward. That's not a problem. That's not contrary to any rules.
I think what's most important is to avoid walking into any potential situation, given what we have just experienced on the Ko'olau side of the island. And that is that our council needs to advocate for the strongest and highest level assurance, in this case, I believe the word is assurance, that there will indeed be, if need be, that follow-up, if need be, said consultation, and that nobody has to force anybody else, or nobody has to have an expectation that this is going to be, and then away it turn around later on down the road, and it didn't turn out that way. So it's with great faith in all of the players that we be able to do this. Hang on, I'm going to get our AG on the line. One moment.
Can I ask a quick question, Hina?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, so this is about process, because I understand, I have heard that there are projects that have amended their AIS to include kupuna that were found later on. After the AIS was concluded, they amended the AIS to include Ivikupuna that had been found on that property as previously identified. Can somebody explain that to me, if that is something that actually happens or doesn't happen?
Hang on. I'm going to excuse myself. I'm going to mute myself. I'm going to ask this question of our AG. One moment. Yeah.
While Hina is out of the room, I think we can carry on our conversation. I can understand the need for, once you're under construction and you find some Ivi Kupuna, you don't want to tie up the construction. You know, you want to keep moving. However, I think the provision of having more input from the descendants needs to be strengthened. And that's Matt, that's all I'm asking for. That's all I'm looking for. I understand, and that there's two ways of getting that. One is making sure that we as an OIBC, as the OIBC, are very comfortable with your AIS, that you've done an adequate job in covering, looking at all the corners. And number two, that there's a provision for the burial treatment plan to really assure the descendants that they're going to be involved if something shows up at the last minute or after the fact.
Understood, Chuck. Thank you.
I just want to keep talking. Too much silence here. Ali, say something.
Yeah, and actually what we're determining today is just preserve in place, right?
We're determining two things. One is, do we want to preserve in place, and we need a motion for that. We eventually will be. And number two, do we approve of the burial treatment plan?
Is that on the agenda? Because, like I say, I had the older agenda.
I think it is. Isn't? Am I right?
Or is it just?
Aloha, this is Regina. Yep, Hale Waiolu is on today's OIBC agenda for determination and recommendation to Shifty whether to accept or not accept the burial treatment plan.
Okay, that was my question. What we're actually acting on? Yeah.
Just a real quick Manao, although I kakou and support the conversation that has been taking place this last while now, I just want to make sure that we do not lose the focus. Our although there is always the bigger picture, to me it feels like we are ignoring this Ivi Kupuna, this Ivi Keiki, that this Kupuna is supposed to be the topic of our conversation. And to me, I think whether or not we're going to approve the burial treatment plan to preserve in place today or not should kind of be kept foremost on our mind before we start talking about changing laws and, you know, languages and stuff like that. So like I said, although I appreciate the conversation and I support where it's going, I think we've forgotten about the most important thing in the room, the Ivi Kupuna.
I mahalo for that, mana. I can't call that.
So whether or not we decide today or not, I think, you know, that should be the next decision to be made. So as not to leave the Kupuna unattended.
Yeah, because somebody said perception is everything. So my perception is the me almost power, right?
Hi.
What?
Hi. Happy of Kali.
Actually, Ali, why don't you call for a motion?
Motion for, are we waiting for Hina?
Well, she could be a while yet.
I can't give a motion without Hina.
Hang on.
Oh, here she comes.
Okay, all right. I so appreciate Linda Chow. She always takes my call. Thank you very much. Okay, so according to our AG advice, her interpretation of this is that the way the rules are written, that the proceedings from the time of the AIS up until the BTP, until reaching the time where BTP becomes appropriate, there should have been adequate consultation, adequate time to request for further testing, and to give greater assurance to any and all concerns you know, that need to be addressed. With that said, she then said that it is the purview of the SHPD to determine how they would like to treat that situation. We know that it is very common for SHPD to execute in a very short amount of time and to turn around decision making to expedite whatever needs to happen. But she did say that SHPD could turn around and put it back to the borough council and you know, encourage the project proponent to do the same. She also did say that there's nothing that precludes not only project proponent, but also archaeological efforts to echo and be supportive of that end. So in this case, we are here at the BTP today, and you know, we could advocate for that to happen. And that would be one or more of the following: that SHPD would honor the request, that any and all future fines, you know, that SHPD is amiable to engaging, and that would engage, and also that project proponent, along with the archaeological firm, would be supportive of that. With that said, does anyone have any question for me in terms of what the advice was per our AG? Council members, discussion.
Regina, did you understand that?
In plain English,
up to
Regina.
I mean,
I was not aware of that, but I'll talk to Linda.
Yes. So, like I said, she said, it's your call. You know, it depends on how you want to handle it.
Yeah, I've never been told that ever. Like, even within the history and culture branch of SHPD, I have never, ever been told that. So, this is news to me, which is extremely surprising, but I'll reach out to Linda for her to clarify.
I don't think she said anything to try to necessarily undermine you and your authority.
Oh, no.
But yeah, I think she actually empowered you to do, you know. But however, for the people on the descendant side, part of how the rules are written are meant to help situations where it is sufficient for the SHPD to go out and do their work and to expedite in timely manner, not trying to downplay the importance of doing right, but there was a balance written in between the borough council and the SHPD, and that was part of the creation of the law itself, and then the rules that helped to guide us. So yeah, perhaps if Regina, you may want to follow up with Linda on this particular topic, but that's what Linda had just told me.
Okay, mahalo. Just for my context, because I actually left the meeting to go take a phone call from DoCare. And then when I came back, I believe we were still on the Hale Wai'olu agenda item. Is this conversation pertinent to Hale Wai'olu, or is it to a different context?
Yes, it is.
Okay, mahalo.
Mahalo. With that said, I think we should go back to council members. We are faced with the kuleana of, hold on, where are you? Discussion and determination whether to preserve in place or relocate human skeletal remains at the above location for Halewaiʻolu project. And Matt just reminded us of what that was. Council members, further discussion on this?
Real quick.
Okay.
Would the council be okay if I made a motion to preserve in place the EV?
Oh, yes.
Yes, please.
Or did you need like another month to consider?
No, no. I think we're in
Malamaka EV.
Okay.
Chair will entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I move to preserve in place the EV identified in the burial treatment plan for the Halewaiʻolu Senior Residence Project, Ahupaʻao Honolulu, Moku Okona, Ailana o Oahu, TMK 117006012.
Oh yeah, mahalo ayane he kako o.
Second.
Mahalo e auli'i wa hapa ia wa kako o ia. Apea ailike ailike ane kako.
Aye.
Oh yeah, apono ia ho'oholo ia. So carried. This council
mahalo
officially elects to preserve in place.
Mahalo.
The kupuna remains. Mahalo, Matt, for your presentation. Ke olu olu, Matt, you still have the floor for our next update. This is simply an update.
Wait a minute.
This is Regina. Do you guys want to make another motion to accept, for OIBC to recommend acceptance or not acceptance of
the era?
The burial treatment plan that you just made a determination on.
Okay.
Okay, so
then before we would do that, this is where the conversation that I had with the AG comes in, and I leave this to the wisdom of the council. Is everyone okay with putting a motion forward to recommend to the SHPTI to accept DBTP, or to attempt what was being discussed earlier, and we heard all of the various sentiments Kamanaʻo put forward, and we all heard the discussion. So, is there any sentiment on this, council members?
I'll give a quick Manaʻo. My Manaʻo is I support us recommend. Making the recommendation to the SHPTI to accept this burial treatment plan as written. After you had given us the manaʻo of the AG's office, I more so kakoʻo this, only because it kind of solidifies Regina's role as to, you know, when she has enough time or you know, circumstances to consult fully. But there are some times that you wouldn't want her to take her time and talk to everybody. You know, if a sewer line breaks and there's shit going on our Ivi Kupuna, do I want to wait till Regina calls me to ask me permission to move the Kupuna? Absolutely not. I defer to her in those kinds of situations that sometimes you just cannot, for the safety of the Kupuna, do a mass call out and wait for the next YBC meeting and so on and so forth. So with that manaʻo from Linda Chow and the way that this burial treatment plan is written, I kakoʻo.
Yes, and thank you, Mana, for bringing that up. I do believe that as part of the articulation of said balance between role and responsibility of not only the council, but our burial site specialists. And in instances like that, the burial site specialist cannot be encumbered by a process that would utterly bring even more damage and more desecration to Ivi Kupuna. So truly then, just like it's incumbent upon our own integrity as council members to advocate for what the descendants come forward to us to advocate for, but also the burial site specialists to consider their purview over issues like this, and when you know, when the conditions are most applicable and conducive, that they too have consultation, but when necessary, that they can act judiciously.
Right. But also with that said, I think we should keep on this subject matter because this has been a real ugly head in feral treatment plants moving forward. So yes, we should keep on this and identify what we should do in the future. That's it, Madam Chair. Can I entertain the second motion?
Go ahead.
Madam Chair, I recommend that that the OIBC make a recommendation to the State Historic Preservation Division to accept the barrier treatment plan for the Howard Le Waiolu Senior Residence Project, Honolulu Ahupua'a, Moku Okona, Moku Puni o Oahu, TMK, Kahi Kahi Hiku, Ole Ole Ono, Ole Humikuma Lua.
Mahalo.
Second.
Wahapai ia, wakako o ia. Peane, apono kako.
Aye.
Oh yeah. All in favor? So carried. This council officially recommends to the SHPD to accept the BTP.
Mahalo. Much appreciated.
Mahalo.
Mahalo.
Mahalo, Matt. One moment here, everyone.
Mahalo, Matt, for your patience.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for your service. Appreciate it.
Next item too, right? Please don't open any more cans of worms.
Okay, we need to, before we go back to you, Matt, one moment.
Cans of worms and elephants in the room.
A veritable zoo. Okay. I understand that there was interest, and I see the ohana in the room. So, Regina, before I forget, because we are not agendized today to discuss anything that has to do with the Hakipu'u community, might we be able to agendize?
Aloha. No, this is Regina. I think we do have it. It's under...
oh, I'm sorry. Did I miss it?
And communications. It's not under business, so it's
further down.
No, that's right. Item five. I think that's five. 5E. It's the address on there is wrong. I think it says 49079 Johnson Road.
Oh, here it is. Okay,
the address should be 49-051 Johnson Road. Although the TMK might be the correct one.
Okay, my bad. Sorry. Yeah. We'll get.
No, that's okay. That. No worries.
Okay, I'll read that when we get there. Mahalo, Matt. Please take it away.
Okay, again, Matt McDermott with Cultural Surveys Hawaii here to speak to the Ala Moana Plaza project. I do have with me, I believe they're online, Jeremy Shorenstein and Brad Anderson. They're from Brookfield. Before we get into the project, I think they just wanted to go over some of the specifics about the project with you. This is something that we've discussed before. We had a cultural descendant meeting back in December of last year. That was followed quickly by a Oahu Island Barrel presentation project in December of last year. So this will be the second time we've come before you. We are providing an update on the ongoing AIS excavations. But I think at this time, if I could just turn it over to Jeremy and Brad to go through the first slides of the PowerPoint.
Aloha, everyone. This is Jeremy Shorenstein. We also have Kaeo Kane on the line. From Brookfield Properties, Brad Anderson. Actually had to drop off for a call, unfortunately.
Jeremy, aloha. Might you be able to turn up your volume just a little?
Oh, shucks. Okay, sorry. One second. Apologies. Let me figure out how to do that.
There you go. We can hear you a little bit better now.
Is that better?
Yes.
Okay. If I hold the microphone close.
Mahalo.
Great. So just wanted to give, again, a brief overview, just a few slides of where the site is located. So Plaza is on Piikoi Street and Kona Street. You can see the future rail station highlighted in green. and in the Eva Malka corner of Alamana Center. Next slide, please. So again, this is the project boundary. So there's five retailers that are currently on site. It's about 15,000 square feet of in-place single-story retail, including the Nijia Market, Taiyo Ramen, Chodang, which is a Korean restaurant, Eggs and Things, and JQ Hawaii. Next slide, please. So general overview, 595 units. So this is, we previously, I think it presented 550. We were able to allow more units to be added, 595, of which 20% will be affordable housing. And that includes studios, one beds and two beds. And just for clarity, that affordable housing is for 80% of area median income, which is the greatest need bracket in affordable housing in Honolulu. Next slide. So that's it from the Brookfield team. I can turn it over to Matt if you want to take it away.
Before we go into the archaeological background and the AIS testing strategy that's going on, any questions for Jeremy from the council? Okay.
Not for me.
Seeing none. So just we have some location photos and maps here. We are at the corner of P.E. Koi and Kona Street. This is a small mall, single story, has the five stores there or storefronts. Famous for the location of Eggs and Things to bring it to everyone's frame of mind. Next slide, please. This is what it looks like from looking basically south, looking at Diamond Head, Makai. The big parking structure on the left is for Alamoana. In the foreground or the midground is the single story buildings that house the five businesses that are currently there. These were constructed in 1989, so relatively recently, so not older than 50 years, so not an architectural historic property there. So the project doesn't involve any federal funding. It's completely privately owned on private land, so it falls under the 6C42 review. The agency that will first trigger the need for historic preservation review will be the Transitory Development Branch of the Department of Design and Department of Planning and Permitting, excuse me. So we're working with the State Historic Preservation Division to come up with a AIS testing strategy, which we are now implementing. We also had a meeting back in December, as I mentioned, with the Cultural Descendants, and we did have an earlier presentation with the Wahoo and Barrel Council about this project. Next slide. So this is the USGS map showing the project area there, marked in red in the center of the project, center of the image. You can see that it's in a big area of green or teal. It's labeled FL, that's fill land. That's an important part of the story here. This landscape was very low-lying going back until about 1940. Salt pans, marshes, ponds, all these sorts of things were in this area. And they brought in all this fill post-1939 to this area. And we'll document that in the upcoming figures. Next slide. So this is an 1817 Kotzebue map. It shows just this early time period of Western-style maps. But it does show land use that we think was probably in effect in pre-contact times going up into the early historic period. We have ponds represented by these large areas there, habitations, the little trapezoid figures, and salt pans as well. And the project area is kind of right in the center of these area of fish ponds and salt pans. And it turns out in later historic maps that proves exactly to be the case. So land use was probably a mix of dispersed habitation, salt pans in this low-lying marshy environment. Next slide. So here we have a more recent map. This is the 1884 Bishop map. It has a lot more detail to it. We're in the area of kind of the Eva end of Kalia, right where it meets Kukuluayo and Kevalo. So those are the land
land names that particularly go for this area. We have land commission awards from the mid 1800s that talk about land. There were land commission awards that were used for fort land, for subsistence farming for soldiers. And we have ki'opua, or small ponds used to raise small fish in the immediate vicinity. So while we don't have conclusive documentation of ponds in the area, which we will later, we do have written accounts that there were ponds in the project area very close by. Next slide. So now we've gone to the century. We have this 1911 Podmore map. It clearly shows that the project area was in, at least a large portion of it, the Eva portion, was in a pond, probably one of these ki'opu that were described in the LCA testimony. This Podmore map is particularly important because it has detailed documentation of elevation above sea level. You can see that there's little notations which are difficult to read on the left-hand side, a little easier to read on the right-hand image. Those are showing feet above sea level. You can see here it's 1.0 or 0.0, 1.4, quite a low-lying environment. This was when the Kamehameha schools sold the land to Dillingham's before the development of what would become Ala Moana. But important to show that we have the pond covering the Eva portion or the western portion of the project area, and the environment was quite low-lying or two above sea level. Next slide. This is a little bit later map, 1921, showing again that same pond with more detail. It also shows a square that was probably some sort of structure, either a residence or a warehouse or outbuilding maybe. So the immediate vicinity does have salt pans and does have these ponds, so that structure could be related to the use of those things. Next slide, please. This is a 1927 aerial photograph, the first photograph we have of the project area. You can see it largely matches with the 1921 map we saw earlier. Clearly ponds in the vicinity and within the project area, particularly the Eva side. And then you can see a quite square in dark gray that is probably that structure that we saw in the earlier map. You can see immediately kind of Mackay and Diamond Head of the square showing the project area. There's a check work pattern. That would be the salt pans from the Kalia salt works that were in the vicinity and used up to at least about the 1920s. Next slide, please. We have a 1939 to 1941 Army aerial photograph of the same project area. You can see the ponds are still in place. The filling has not really occurred yet. There's a white scar that comes through the project area, kind of oriented in a Mackay Mauka diamond, Mauka Mackay direction. It looks like some sort of a road, or maybe that's they're beginning to put in fill for the project area, something like that. Next slide, please. So how we have a 1952 aerial photograph showing the development of the project area to what would become Ala Moana. All the white you see around the project area is crushed coral fill that's been imported from offshore, basically raising low environment that's only a foot or two above sea level into the current landscape we have today, which is 4 to 5 to 6 feet above sea level. The current project area shows as a black mass. It's recent asphalt around a parking lot for a gas station from 1952 up into the late 80s. Next slide, please. So there's been a great deal of archaeological work done in the vicinity, although there was no prior testing within the project area itself. We do have a number of projects that surround the project area. The pink stripe lines you see, they're labeled Hammett 2013. That's the archaeological inventory survey project, which goes immediately Mauka along Konish. We have Morris et al. 2013, another archaeological inventory for the Ala Moana expansion as they move the Nordstrom from Ember. There's been archaeological monitoring in Pi'ikoi Street, and immediately is the Hale Vaiolu, the Hale Kualo project area. That's where you see the barns in Scheider 2007 and Runyon et al. 2012. Another archaeological inventory surface testing. So the area has been surrounded by archaeological testing, but nothing had been done immediately within that area. Next slide, please. So what types of archaeological historic properties have been found? You can see there's large kind of masses labeled 6636. That's the historic property that has been designated as the Koala Wetlands. It's basically the old land surface below the fill. It was the land surface from the pre-contact into the historic period when it was covered over with all the recent fill in the post-1920s, post-1930s era. So a lot of exposures of that. It includes some salt pans, some pond sediments that are all rolled into that historic property. You see some red triangles in the vicinity. The closest one to the project area would be 4243. That was an inadvertent find during construction of a single bone fragment, and it was handled by the SHPD back in the 80s. There's 4847, which is a disturbed individual found at the intersection of Pi'ikoi and Kapilani there. And then we do see the 07117, which is the Waihunua project, which we've been talking about just recently, but there were a large number of burial finds. It is important to point out that that was an area of a pond, but it did have a significant sand berm in the vicinity, and those burials were found associated with that sand berm. So somewhat of a different environment than what we'd expect in the current project area, which, as far as we know, doesn't have sand berms and is very low lying. Next slide, please. So these just show some representative stratigraphy from the projects immediately surrounding the area. This is from the Ala Moana Center footprint, the Morris et al. Study. You can see there's, in the photograph, a large band of white and then a large band of brown. Those are all fill sediments brought in to raise up the project area. The only natural sediments are down there at the very bottom, the gray layer that you can see. Again, so the natural land surface based on this would have been about that 1 to 2 feet above sea level that we'd expect on our map. Question? Oh. Next slide, please. So this is another example of stratigraphy from immediately outside the project area. This is from the Rail AIS, the Hammett et al. 2013. Again, you can see massive amounts of fill brought in going almost down to the water table before they hit natural sediments. And again, you can see the natural sediments are labeled that 6636, that Koala Wetlands historic property that was documented in other areas. Next. So consultation summary, we did reach out to the cultural descendants from the area, including the Monica Terras and his Ohana, the Hohui, the Norman Ohana. Hina was there at this consultation meeting on December 11th. Following that, we did reach out to the Oahu and Barrow Council, gave a presentation very similar to this on the 18th. Subsequent to that, in March and April of 2020, we did meet on site at least once and have conversations and email conversations with the Norman and Kateres Ohana about the AIS testing strategy and the need to do additional testing in the project area. Next slide, please. So based on the initial background research, we came up with a testing strategy shown on the here in blue. So seven archaeological test trenches were proposed, and we did that work. Subsequently, based on conversations again with SHPD and the Kateres and Norman Ohana, it was thought to augment that. So we did additional testing, which is shown on the right-hand image, that's in red. So we added trenches T8 and T9. This area on the area where that structure was found, as we test out of the footprint of the pond. You clearly see the overlay of the current project area and the testing with the overlay of the pond on the left-hand image. We've had subsequent conversations with the cultural descendants in the area. They wanted to see actually within the project, the buildings in the project area. So we've added to the ASB, and those locations are shown with the A and B on the image on the right. So we are currently testing in the JQ store, which is where the A is, and the Tayo store where the B is. So this is going to interior testing, which is a bit difficult. It takes about 3 days to do one test trench. Just yesterday, I was 7 feet below the floor of the JQ store doing this AIS test trenching. I believe the next image kind of shows what that looks like. Next slide, please. So this is yesterday, the testing that we did. The left-hand image shows the interior of the store where we tested. You can see the stationery, the shelves, quite a congested area to test. Moved the slide, created what I term the Dexter kill room. If you're familiar with the TV show Dexter, it's basically a containment pod so we can work inside the building and not get out carbon monoxide from the excavator. So we create the containment pod and we excavate within that containment pod using positive airflow. You can see that in the image on the right. Next slide, please. So based on the results of this, you know, we did find remains of natural sediment in the project area. These photographs kind of show that. We did find remains of the pond and pond sediments in the area we thought the pond would be. In the areas that were not of the pond, we do have low-lying natural sediments, marshy, again, about 1 to 2 feet above sea level, as we expected based on the Podmore map. The image on the left is showing that fill, all crushed coral fill down to that gray layer is about 1 foot to 1.5 feet above sea level, and it is the natural sediment there. The image on the right is, again, it's inside of the building. This is yesterday's test excavation inside the J. You've got that massive fill layers going down to about 5.5 feet below the current land surface, and then natural sediment there just above the water table. Between 7 feet and 6 feet below the current floor. Just to show that we are currently adding on to the AIS based on the concerns of the culture descendants, doing more work, but we've consistently found that we have that low-lying natural land surface. We don't have the high sand berm or the high ridge where we get more culture deposits, burials, that sort of thing. We cannot say conclusively that there are not human remains here, but it's looking less likely based on these results. We just have that low-lying marshy environment, which is not particularly conducive to burial deposits. So next steps, we'll complete the testing next week within the Tayo shop, very similar to the images that I showed you. There'll be additional consultation with the Kateris Norman and the Ho'ohuli Ohana as these potential culture descendants come forward. But just to be clear, there are no human remains found within this AIS yet. We just have probably the one historic property, potentially two, depending on how we decide to divide it up with the SHBD. One potentially being the pond, the other being that 6636 land surface that has already been designated for the area. We'll finish the AIS work. We'll do a write-up of the AIS report for SHBD review. And most likely that the AIS will recommend a program of archaeological monitoring just as a safeguard, as a mitigation measure during the construction of this project. Any questions? Appreciate your taking the time to listen to my recap.
Mahalo, Matt.
Mahalo, Matt.
Hello.
He mauni nau, council members.
Aohe.
Aohe ni nau.
Aohe ni
nau. Aye, ke ala?
Yes, so mahalo, Hina. Matt, I requested also to have a AIS to be done in the eggs and things section of that building. I understand it's difficult to do because they are still, you know, functioning right now. My question is, can it be done after they terminate, and can that be included into the AIS as an AIS, you know, later on.
Right. Well, there's been a lot of discussion about this, and I appreciate your comments. We've had a lot of discussion, you question along with Monica Terrace. I've talked to SHPD, particularly Susan Lebo and Kinano Rodriguez, the head of the Barrel Culture and History Branch. It just seems that it becomes difficult based on the rules and regulations to have this kind of added on AIS after the demolition. They're looking for the approval of their permits at this point, and before they can have their permits approved to go forward, get their funding for the project, they need to have the AIS accepted and move forward. If they can't get the AIS accepted, they can't really move forward. They can't really go to demolition. It's catch 22 there. So in the discussion with SHPD, they said it was better for us to go ahead and the bulk of the testing that we could do now as part of the AIS with the building still up. That's why we came up with this testing strategy with these additional trenches inside the buildings. We did reach out to Eggs and Things. I went on site. We looked through the ability to do it. They just pushed back very hard and did not want to have us in their business when difficulties for COVID-19. I think, you know, if we do have results to what we have in the shop been done in the vicinity, I think we have a strong argument that we don't really have those extra elements in the project area. We don't have the sand berms that we fear.
Well, my concern is that in one of the pictures that you showed, I think it was a picture on the right of the test trench, you said that there is natural sediment in there. So could that be the beginning of a sand berm that could possibly have Ibi Kupuna? Because my question now too would be, if an AIS is not done after I'm requesting for one and you do impact Ibi Kupuna, what's going to happen at that time? What next? How do we protect Kupuna if there's not going to be another test trench in the Eggs and Things that it happens to be closer to that structure that was there?
We've done a number of test units in the vicinity of that structure. They haven't really found any remains particularly associated with the structure. Certainly haven't found any human remains yet. You know, we've had some comments during the previous agenda item about how much can we expect from an AIS. I mean, short of digging up the entire project footprint down to the water table, it's always going to be a sampling strategy. I think we're trying to gain information to build up a confident argument that we don't really have sedimentary think are going to have human remains in them. That's the best we can do.
I don't know. I'm just saying I'm not comfortable with that answer. Just going to go on record and say that. Thanks, Matt.
Mahalo.
Thank you, Keala.
So, Matt, I'm convinced from everything you've taught us that you probably won't find any human remains, any Ibi Kupuna in that area. I'm convinced of that. But what is a timeline for the development of this project?
My connection is not really good. Could you repeat your first part of your statement?
I am convinced that from what you've taught us over the years of this area, you aren't going to find any human remains there. But as a timeline, who does your client own the property now?
They do. Brookfield owns the project area.
So the timeline is they're going to go in for a building permit. They can't get the permit unless the AIS is approved. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And then they will start construction. They have not gone in for a building permit yet, right? Have they gone in for a building permit?
They have not. The first step will be that TOD, the Transitory Development Approval through Department of Planning and Permitting, and that will, after they get that, they'll go into the DPP for the actual demo permits and building permits, that sort of thing.
What is their schedule for tearing down the buildings?
Jeremy is online. I don't want to answer. I could give something wrong. Maybe Jeremy, could you take that question?
Yeah, we're looking at demolition probably October of next year.
About a year and a half from now, a little over a year. So you won't have your building permit by then either, right? So why couldn't you finish up the AIS after you've torn down the building?
Well, go ahead, Matt.
Yes. So part of the, you know, to get the permit to do the demo, they need to have an accepted AIS. So they can't do the demo unless they have an accepted AIS. So it's just kind of this catch 22.
Yes.
That's more like a catch 66. Yeah, I see. If they're tearing it down in October, I thought you needed your AIS for the building instruction. Why would you need an AIS to take a building down?
I'm sorry.
Because like I say, you aren't going to find any remedy there anyway. But I appreciate Kayala's concern. I mean, we talked about this for 2 hours a little while ago. So,
Chuck, I believe that in this case, you can either do one of two things. Either amend the AIS or do a supplemental AIS to be able to address the concerns that may come up.
Yeah, I don't want to belabor the point. I think over the few weeks, you got to think about the concerns that have been expressed here this afternoon, especially by Kayala and myself and others, and see what is the best way that your AIS can address those concerns. Fair enough?
Yes. I'm particularly happy that my fellows from Brookfield are good to hear this discussion. It goes a long way.
But I don't want to spend too much time on this because, again, your site there is pretty barren, I think. Anything you find there is going to be mixed in with fill, and I think that's another category.
Mahalo.
Yeah, we try to target our AIS investigations based on the sensitivity of the project, and we're doing a good faith effort with this. Can we do more? We always can, but again, short of digging up the entire project footprint, we never can conclusively say there'd be no human skeleton remains.
Mahalo, Matt. You know, as someone who always supports everyone, especially in this room, to acquire just that little bit more information, to support critical thinking. I think that today, although we spent a whole lot more time than I anticipated on, you know, a very short agenda, I thought that our discussions helped to serve the larger purpose of elevating everybody who is online. It helps to make intelligent and rational kinds of judgment calls, decision making, and discussion when we are all in the greater know. So with that, Matt, anything further regarding this?
No, I appreciate your time. There'll be further updates for this project as we move forward. Thank you.
Mahalo, Matt. Mahalo, council members. We have our audience. We have just a few more items here. Okay, and I would like to skip straight to item E, update on past events and future preservation plans. There's a correction to the address at Johnson Road in Hakipu'u, Moko Ko'olaupoko, Aino Ahu TMK, Kahi Ha Ole Ole Kolu. Ole Ole Lua, I know that there are several Fukumitsu Ohana in the room. So will it be Ohana Fukumitsu or will it be Regina to go first?
Aloha, this is Regina. I'll just provide a quick update from my side.
So I reached out to DoCare yesterday and was called back by the regional supervisor for DoCare on the Ko'olau Loa/Ko'olau Poko side of the island. At this time, I'm emailing SHPD staff and to see what their availability is for a site visit for the purposes of making an initial assessment and investigating alleged damages to the Hakipu'ulo'i terraces, which is a known and documented historic property. And yeah, I'm going to send out that email in just a few minutes. It'll be to Susan and then our Oahu archaeologist, Samantha. That's all I have so far. Maybe I'll have more after I get a response from them.
Mahalo. Any of our Ohana Fukumitsu care to expound?
I'm not sure. I would assume a lot of people in the meeting do understand there's been a lot that's happened since the last OIBC meeting. So within this month, it's been kind of a lot of chaos, a lot of updated things. Should we just start with kind of like an overview of what happened since the last OIBC meeting?
That would be excellent. Before you do that, I guess something for everyone to remember, that as far as the borough council, according to how we are set up and according to what empowers us to do what we do, right now we have executed and done a nice little chunk of what we can do. And that's why this is agendized at this, in this space here when it comes to inadvertence and communications. So, you know, while we would like to think that we can do a whole lot, by giving you the platform
it's
here
2 o'clock
to speak and to update, this helps you to bring it into a public forum. Let me hold on to your thought for just a minute. This is a request. I believe it's from your family member, Michelle Makalua. One of the things that she writes here, and everyone can look at it, it's in the chat that everyone can see. So it says, please ensure that YB and SHPD will provide a formal investigation. That is something that it and any kind of formal investigation or any kind of follow-up for issues that could come forward now would be within the purview of SHPD. The Borough Council is a public forum that you can put this out there and that you can utilize to help galvanize support towards the issue. In the event that something very specifically is done towards Ivi Kupuna disturbance, we can agendize this as a part of the main agenda. But let me see. As far as the council itself having teeth, that's not what we do have. But again, that's why we do avail this time to you to bring forward concerns and to be able to update us. And we appreciate that you bring this to us. So please take it, go ahead and take it away.
So, aloha, my name is Kole Mitu. I'm a lineal descendant to Ivi Kupuna on address 49051 Johnson Road. We'd like to give you guys a quick update of kind of what's been happening and what has happened, kind of leading up to where Regina was talking about her call with DoCare. So this is back in June 10th. We were awarded lineal descendancy. say a day after there was some work on the property. And I know in the previous council meeting, Mr. Morgan had stated he wasn't going to do any work at all touching the ground. So that was stated, and it became an issue for us because he made promises. And so he did make contact with the earth with what seems to be a machine. And so that was one issue that we had a discussion about. And so the next day, Friday, June 12th, we had